It is really wrong, and it's all driven by stigma. And really, you know, the historical shame and stigma that surrounds substance use and addiction are really exacerbated for pregnant women. And that's because the symptoms and the manifestations of addiction are really inconsistent with our societal perceptions of motherhood. And so a pregnant woman or a mother who uses drugs is perceived to be unfit as a mother by society. And the stigma is just particularly profound for women with this disease.
That is the voice of Lindsay Vuolo, the Associate Director of Health Law and Policy at Center on Addiction, which is a science-based nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to finding and promoting solutions to end addiction. She and her colleague Sarah Dauber, who is the Associate Director of Adolescent and Family Research at the Center on Addiction, they join us to discuss policies that affect how pregnant women with substance use disorders may or may not access care, and how we can better align policy with evidence-based care of women with substance use disorders. Check our website, www.primarycare.hms.harvard.edu, and click on ROS Podcast at the top to learn more about Lindsay, Sarah, and the Center on Addiction. And you'll find some links of the articles we discussed today and an archive of our old shows. Also, you should definitely scroll back in your feed for the first two shows in this series on the care of pregnant women with substance use disorders. Thanks for listening. Thank you both so much for joining us. Could you maybe introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. Thanks, Audrey, for having us. My name is Lindsay Vuolo, and I am the Associate Director of Health Law and Policy at Center on Addiction. My work is really focused on legal, regulatory, and policy efforts to improve addiction prevention and treatment. And most relevant to this podcast, some of my work is focused on improving access to evidence-based treatment and reducing stigma.
Hi, Audrey. Thanks for having us. My name is Sarah Dauber. I'm a developmental psychologist by training and the Associate Director of Adolescent and Family Research at Center on Addiction.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and get started. I think Lindsay is going to take this first question. The Guttmacher Institute has a website with some really incredible information compiled about the policies that affect pregnant women with substance use disorders. And I wanted to review some of the numbers they have there because it's kind of startling. There are four states listed on this list of states that permit civil commitment for substance use during pregnancy. And there have been some pretty high profile cases of this occurring for pregnant women being committed for treatment against their will. If a healthcare provider or other stakeholder found out that they were using during that time. And there are 22 states and DC that have policies that consider substance use during pregnancy as child abuse. And it seems to me that these policies can be problematic. What are the implications for such policies? I know the desire is, of course, to protect the fetus, but it seems to me this may not be the best approach.
So this is Lindsay, and that's right. You know, these policies actually purport to promote the health and safety of the baby, but the reality is that the mother and baby are so connected that you cannot protect one while harming the other. At worst, these policies seek to punish women for their substance use, and at best, they're intended to motivate pregnant women and mothers to stop using substances and engage in treatment. That's sort of based on this idea that punitive measures create a motivation for seeking treatment. But underlying these punitive approaches to prenatal substance use is really a misunderstanding of addiction. This misunderstanding that addiction is a moral failing or a personal weakness or a choice when it's actually a chronic disease. It's been pretty well established that fear is not an effective deterrent for substance use. That's a belief that's based on stigma and misunderstanding. There are no studies that demonstrate that the impact of punitive policies on the rate of prenatal substance use. What these policies actually do is they cause women to fear that they will lose custody of their unborn child or other children if their substance use is discovered. Mm. And this fear actually results in the policies having the opposite of their intended effect. Instead of motivating women to seek treatment, pregnant women who use addictive substances will often avoid medical professionals and forego prenatal care and substance use disorder treatment, and that significantly increases the risk of harm to themselves and their babies.
Yeah.
There's one study that found women who use drugs are six times more likely to forego prenatal care because of fear of being reported to authorities for prenatal substance use.
Hmm. So what kind of policies might be more effective in promoting the health of the fetuses and pregnant women who may have a substance use disorder?
Policies that would be most effective are those that prioritize connecting women to effective treatment. While fear is not a motivator to seek treatment, pregnancy actually is. So we should be really capitalizing on this opportunity to engage women in treatment. The majority of women who use substances actually cut back or stop during pregnancy. Mm-hmm. But pregnant women who have a substance use disorder cannot be motivated to simply stop using substances. Not that these women don't care about their babies or they use substances with willful disregard for potential harm. They have a disease that prevents them from stopping their substance use. Pregnant women who continue to use substances often meet the DSM criteria for substance use disorder, and they need treatment. So instead of focusing on punishing women, we should be making efforts to connect them to treatment. Unfortunately, these laws can actually prevent women from receiving effective treatment. One study found that states that have laws that permit civil or criminal child abuse charges for prenatal substance abuse, in those states, medication-assisted treatment, which is the gold standard for opioid addiction treatment, was used in about one-third of the treatment admissions as compared to being used in about one-half of the treatment admissions in states without such laws. So while these policies may intend to connect women to treatment, in reality, they actually prevent pregnant women from receiving effective treatment.
I've heard substance use disorder advocates oftentimes compare medications for addiction, like buprenorphine, I've heard, or Subutex, which is one that's most commonly used, I believe, in pregnant women, compared to like insulin for diabetics. So it would be like reporting her to the authorities because she was a diabetic during pregnancy and then committing her but not giving her insulin. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I think that's a great analogy. And it just shows how, you know, when it comes to addiction, we're not always relying on what the evidence and the data tells us. We still have this inclination to rely too much on these misunderstandings and really stigma.
Yeah, and even in the medical profession, it's really shocking how I think poorly understood it is, and how much we rely on these kind of old ideas about. Maybe not even old, I don't know, these kind of traditional ideas about what works, like detox or things like that. But in that same vein, but with some kind of crucial differences, there are some other states, about 22 states in D.C., that require health professionals to report suspected prenatal drug use, and 7 states require them to test for prenatal drug exposure if they suspect drug use. So this is for physicians or other clinicians who are caring for pregnant women. So again, you know, what do you think the implications of such a policy is? I know the intention of the policy is to promote the health of the fetus and the woman, but, you know, as a healthcare provider, I feel like that's tremendously problematic. It may completely rupture the trust and relationship that I'm trying to establish with the woman and, you know, as you were kind of talking about before, really drive her away.
I think that's exactly right. And as you suggest, you know, these reporting and surveillance policies may not be intended to be punitive, but they really can have that effect if they're not accompanied by efforts to prioritize treatment. And so in order for these types of policies to be effective, they really need to be accompanied by efforts to provide appropriate training to child welfare services where these cases are often reported, as well as efforts to increase access to treatment for women who are identified as having a substance use disorder. Because without these efforts, again, the implication of these policies will be that they become punitive and they'll have the unintended consequence of women hiding their substance use.
Mm-hmm.
As you suggest, they also threaten patient-provider confidentiality, and it's because a woman is likely to forego care if she feels like she can't, if she doesn't trust her provider.
This is Sarah. These policies also have implications for child welfare involvement, but before going into that, I just wanted to mention something briefly about screening, which is very different from the surveillance that Lindsay was talking about. In order to ensure that pregnant women receive effective treatment for substance use disorders, we need to do a better job of identifying them and identifying their needs. And one way of doing this is through systematic screening using standardized self-report tools that can be done within the context of a trusting doctor-patient relationship. And when it's done that way in that context, it can be an effective way of identifying pregnant women who are at risk for developing a substance use disorder. There's been some reluctance to do this screening among healthcare providers. I think there's a lot of potential reasons for this. One that comes up often in the research literature is that doctors don't want to ask their patients about substance use because they wouldn't know what to do if somebody screened positive.
Yeah.
And so one approach that's very widely recommended for identifying individuals at risk for substance use in healthcare settings and linking them to treatment is screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment, which is also called ESPERT.
Mm-hmm.
So when screening is done in prenatal care settings, it should really be part of a full ESPERT protocol to make sure that there are guidelines and procedures in place for following up on a positive screen. And the SAMHSA website is a really great resource for this. They have a lot of resources on how to implement ESPERT. Also, the CDC recently established recommendations for ESPERT that are specific to the perinatal period. And these include universal screening for substance use for all pregnant women, followed by brief intervention for those who screen as low to moderate risk,
mm-hmm.
and referral to substance use treatment for those who screen as the higher risk level.
Okay.
Another barrier to screening, as Lindsay mentioned before, is that pregnant women are often reluctant to admit that they're using substances, even to their doctors.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid of having their kids removed, and especially given some of these punitive policies that we've talked about. So some ways to encourage honest responding that have been tested and have been shown to be effective in some cases have included asking women about their substance use before they became pregnant rather than asking about current use while they're pregnant. Sometimes women can be more comfortable admitting, I used to use substances before I was pregnant, rather than having to say, I'm using them now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the key is to make sure that when somebody does screen positive, that information is used to connect patients to treatment that they need and not to use it as a surveillance method for referrals to Child Protective Services.
Yeah.
So just going back to your question about implications of these reporting policies, one other potential implication of a policy that requires reporting of pregnant women and substance-exposed newborns to Child Protective Services is that it might end up in the baby being placed in foster care.
Right.
And there's been a couple of recent studies that have shown an increase in foster care placement among infants of substance-using parents since the opioid epidemic began. In many states, the child welfare systems don't have the resources to handle these increases. And so what ends up happening is the systems are overwhelmed, which can lead to the families not getting the services that they need. While there certainly are cases for which removal of the child into foster care is the best option, it's often possible to keep the baby with the mother,
mm-hmm.
if supports are put into place. There's been a lot of research that has shown that children of substance-using parents tend to have poorer outcomes in foster care compared to children who are placed into care for other reasons. For example, they tend to stay longer in foster care, and they tend to move around more from placement to placement. Both of those things are associated with worse long-term outcomes.
So, you know, looking at policies surrounding the provision of treatment for pregnant women with substance use disorders, the Guttmacher Institute has collected some really disturbing figures. I was shocked to see this. So apparently only 19 states have created or funded drug treatment programs specifically for pregnant women. And only 17 states and D.C. provide pregnant women with priority access to state-funded drug treatment programs. So I just couldn't believe it. I mean, it's such a vulnerable population, both the, of course, the fetuses and the mothers. They're at such high risk of overdose in the year, it's been shown in the year after delivery. We have these very highly effective treatments for opioid use disorders. And, you know, this overwhelming evidence showing that it benefits the women and the fetuses and babies. And I just don't understand why we're not putting more emphasis on providing these evidence-based treatments. It just, only 19 states, it just...
Yeah, I think you're right. Definitely improving access to evidence-based treatment for pregnant women is definitely critical. And I think as we already mentioned, the gold standard treatment for opioid use disorder for pregnant women is medication, including the use of methadone and buprenorphine, both of which have been shown to be safe and effective for use during pregnancy. And I mean, as you mentioned, despite there being a lot of evidence supporting the use of these medications in pregnant women, it's still widely underutilized in the general population as well, but especially for pregnant women, it's really hard to get access to these treatments. And I think improving access to medication for pregnant and postpartum women is really critical. although medication alone is not sufficient for this population. Pregnant women who use opioids and other substances often have co-occurring mental health problems, such as depression and anxiety, and they often also have long histories of trauma and experiences of child abuse and neglect in their own childhood. For all issues that would need to be addressed in treatment. So what's really needed for this population is a comprehensive approach to treatment that includes these medications that we know work and also behavioral counseling to address these co-occurring needs. And then finally, pregnant and postpartum women need interventions that directly address and support parenting. You know, the postpartum period is a time of really high stress for any new parent, but maybe particularly so for mothers who are substance using. And if the baby has neonatal abstinence syndrome, those babies can be more irritable and fussy than other babies and may also suffer from other symptoms that make them really challenging to care for. So if supportive parenting interventions can be provided during this window, they can really have the opportunity to be successful in capitalizing on this motivation and supporting new mothers in continuing with substance use treatment and recovery.
Yeah.
And this is Lindsay. You know, I just wanted to address your point about, or underscore the point about underutilization of medication-assisted treatment. You know, there's tremendous stigma against MAT, both for pregnant women and in the general population. And I think that most of this is really related to a misunderstanding of these medications. I get, you know, there's sort of this misunderstanding that they substitute one addiction for another. And while agonist medications or partial agonists like buprenorphine and methadone can cause dependence is not the same as addiction.
Yeah.
So if an individual is taking these medications and they're able to work and they're able to care for their family and they're not getting arrested and they're not suffering from an overdose, then that person is not addicted. And that's really a crucial difference. These medications all, you know, promote employment, promote family relationships, reduce the risk of overdose, reduce the risk of criminal justice involvement. And we have a lot of work to do to increase that among both pregnant women and the general population. And I think there's a few different policy levers that we can pull. I think some are education. We need better education in both the healthcare system and the criminal justice system. You know, the study that I referenced before looking at the use of MAT among pregnant women found that the biggest predictive factor of whether or not a woman received MAT was whether the referral came from the criminal justice system. And so if the woman was referred to treatment through the criminal justice system, that was the least likely that she was going to receive medication-assisted treatment. And that's not surprising because we know that there's a lot of stigma against these medications in the criminal justice system. So we need to be doing a much better job of educating the criminal justice system about what evidence-based treatment looks like, especially if they are, you know, having, because of these punitive policies, are having contacts with pregnant women and making treatment referrals.
Right.
That same study also showed that referral from the healthcare system were also not very high, so that indicates a need for additional training in the healthcare system. And the study also found that women are most likely to receive MAT when the state's Medicaid program covers methadone. And so improving insurance coverage for these medications is another important policy objective in order to increase their access.
Mm. I wanted to talk a little bit about this article that we'll link on our website that was on the website Vice. So it profiled a woman named Melissa, it was a pseudonym, who talked with one of their reporters about her experience when she was pregnant. After she found out she was pregnant, she had to try four different hospitals before she could find a clinic that would offer her prenatal care with treatment for her substance use disorder. And then, as Sarah had pointed out, you know, she was very motivated. She really wanted to get into treatment because of the pregnancy. And then after delivering the daughter, her baby, who was totally healthy, she was followed around in the hospital closely by a social worker. And this is what she describes. So she wrote, before they left the hospital, Department of Youth and Family Services put her on a safety plan, which meant she couldn't be alone with her daughter unless her dad and sister were with her at all times. And she said, if I went anywhere with my daughter without them, I could be arrested for kidnapping my own baby. I mean, of course, everyone wants to keep these children safe, as we talked about. But again, I'm just not sure this is a highly motivated patient who just wants to get well and take good care of her child. I'm just not sure that this is a kind of optimal policy for ensuring the safety of the child and the woman. Sarah, I don't know if you wanted to talk a little bit more about this case and what Melissa had described.
Sure. I think the reason why this probably happened to Melissa has to do with the federal law, the Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act, which requires hospitals to report newborns that are born substance exposed to Child Protective Services. And the law also requires that there be a plan of safe care put into place. The plan of safe care is supposed to ensure the safety of the child while also meeting the mother's needs for substance use and mental health treatment. And that last piece was actually added by the more recent Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act, which required that the plan of safe care be more comprehensive and family-focused, so not only focusing on protecting the child, but also addressing the needs of the mother. And I think in order to really be effective, the plan of safe care needs to also include connecting the family with supportive parenting interventions. One example of this type of intervention that could be a critical component of a plan of safe care is home visiting, which are home visiting programs provide support to high-risk parents in the period of time after birth and sometimes extending even up till the child is, you know, 3 or 4 years old. So it really provides an opportunity for long-term support. And this type of program has a lot of potential as a way of providing the parenting support that substance using mothers and their newborns and families need.
Yeah. So who typically would do the visiting? Is it a nurse or social worker?
It really depends on the program. For the more prevention-focused models, some of them are nurses, like the Nurse Family Partnership is a pretty well-known one, and those are all. And then some of the other ones are just trained, really lay professionals, not necessarily anybody with any advanced clinical training,
right,
trained by the program. And then the more intensive substance use-focused one, it's usually a behavioral health clinician.
Got it. I wanted to read a quote from this article. From Melissa, the woman they profiled, which I thought was really profound. She said, "I feel like this lack of care needs to be talked about so people can hear it and realize there's a problem. For me to be turned down at rehab because I'm pregnant, it should be the complete opposite, and that's what's wrong." Lindsay, I wonder if you have anything you wanted to add here.
Yeah, you know, it is really wrong, and it's all driven by stigma. And really, you know, the historical shame and stigma that surrounds substance use and addiction are really exacerbated for pregnant women. And that's because the symptoms and the manifestations of addiction are really inconsistent with our societal perceptions of motherhood. And so a pregnant woman or a mother who uses drugs is perceived to be unfit as a mother by society. And stigma is just particularly profound for women with this disease. And, you know, again, there's this common misconception that a woman who misuses opioids while pregnant doesn't care about her baby. And if she did care, she would stop using. That assumption is false. We know that long-term substance use impacts the brain in ways that makes it virtually impossible to stop using substances without appropriate treatment and support. And most women who do misuse substances are highly motivated to reduce their substance use to protect their babies. And that's why pregnancy is such a critical window of opportunity for treatment. But in order to take advantage of this opportunity, pregnant women have to feel comfortable to approach their doctors and other medical professionals and seek help. And the stigma and misunderstanding has really resulted in the adoption of policies that emphasize the criminalization of substance use during pregnancy, and it's caused us to focus less on effective prevention and treatment strategies, and we're really missing this critical opportunity to initiate treatment. These two of the largest barriers to effectively addressing addiction are stigma and lack of access to effective treatment, and they're especially pronounced for pregnant and postpartum women. Pregnant women who use substances are often judged harshly by medical and other professionals. There have been media reports on the increased rates of neonatal abstinence syndrome that have really politicized this issue and really demonized women who use substances during pregnancy. What we need to do is develop health-based approaches that are rooted in evidence, not adopt policies that are based on emotion or intuition, which unfortunately have long guided our policy for women with substance use disorder.
Yeah. Okay. Sarah and Lindsay, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Review of Systems, a podcast featuring conversations about the changing healthcare landscape from the Harvard Center for Primary Care. I'm Audrey Provenzano. Check our website, www.primarycare.hms.harvard.edu, and click on ROS Podcast at the top to learn more about Lindsay, Sarah, and the Center on Addiction. and you'll find an archive of our old shows too. And make sure you scroll back in your feed for the first two shows in this series about the care of pregnant women with substance use disorders. We'd love to hear from our listeners, so please tweet us at ROS Podcast or at HMS Primary Care, or send us an email with comments and suggestions at contact@rospod.org. Thanks for listening.